This podcast is proudly supported by Drama Victoria. Consider becoming a Drama Victoria member today to take advantage of the many member benefits. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Bunurong people. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Hello and welcome to The Aside, a podcast for drama students and teachers. I'm Nick Waxman, and today we are lucky enough to have the director of the 2024 playlisted show The Trojan War, Leo Jean Peters, with us to talk about the show. Leo is also the artistic director of A Slightly Isolated Dog, who produced and created the work. Leo is an acclaimed director and excels in creating theatre as immersive celebrations. His trilogy featuring the award-winning Don Juan and Jekyll and Hyde engages audiences through improvisation and humour, earning him a Judge's Excellence Award at the Auckland Theatre Awards. Without any further ado, I bring you Leo Jean Peters. Leo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's fantastic to be here.
Well, it's an absolute delight. Thank you for giving us your time. I appreciate how busy you are touring to Victoria and Australia this week. So thank you for finding the time.
Cool.
So this interview is going to be focused on questions that relate to the VCE drama curriculum. And we're going to just start with some. Are you ready to jump into it?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Can you articulate the performance style of this unique work? If possible, you could explain conventions used in the performance and how they enhance the performance style.
The performance style is a complex kind of question for this work. There are many, basically, in it. A lot of my teaching, a lot of my teachers studied at places like Jacques Lecoq and Philippe Goliere's school in Paris or London, wherever it was at the time. And they studied clown and melodrama and Buffon and all of these different kinds of forms, which are sort of the like kind of modern theatrical forms, I guess you would consider them, of the like latter half of the 20th century, and was definitely like the kind of people making in this way was the very much the sort of hot thing, I guess, in the early part of the 21st century. And so like a lot of my training comes from that pedagogy, but I have no actual direct training or link like to that pedagogy. Like I've never studied at Lecoq or Goliere. And so like, I'm part of it, but like very peripherally. I've never been trained in clown and I've never been trained in any of those forms directly by like any masters. But basically like all of those forms, clown, melodrama, realism, elements of Buffon, very few, but like, all of those forms kind of merge to create the style of the performance that is what we use for Trojan War and Don Juan and Jekyll and Hyde, which is A Slightly Isolated Dog, is this very French, very famous French theater company. So like they use elements of all of these forms, but like never stick kind of coherently to the rules of these forms in a way, because we basically went, when we created the works, we were kind of like just looking at kind of what worked. And we knew we wanted to create something that was explosive and immediate and that involved, like was directly involving the audience. So a lot of direct address storytelling, and wanted to move from direct address storytelling that was very fast and very kind of chaotic with everybody trying to tell this story into scenes and little bits of songs and images or actions or whatever, so that it was like moving between vignettes and narration in a way. And so the style is a kind of hodgepodge collection of all of these different elements. So it's it uses a lot of clown, a lot of the kind of game of clown, where you develop a game with the audience in real time, in real life. So performers fall in love with audience members in the middle of the show, or the audience members X has come to one of the shows, or the performers X has come to one of the shows, or we get an audience up to, there's a lot of audience participation and the kind of form or whatever. So we get people up to play, and then the kind of relationship that's formed through that then lasts throughout the whole show. So it uses a lot of elements of clown. It uses a lot of elements of melodrama, where everything is very big and dramatic, and at the same time, sort of some elements of realism, where we were telling classic tales, but also talking about Snapchat in the same breath, about Achilles' Snapchat account, or the plague that comes upon the Trojan warriors, or the Greek warriors in Troy, is basically results in a COVID lockdown, in that kind of way. So it's a real collision and a real kind of mixing of all of a bunch of different styles and forms.
Brilliant. Yeah, that seems really clear to me. Another thing that stood out, being lucky enough to have seen the show, and it may not be on purpose or intentional, there's kind of Brechtian things that are included as well. That's really episodic, even though, Brecht was inspired by, Homer and the Odyssey, and stories like this, and broken up with song and these kind of open lit and reminding the audience they're watching a play. Is any of that intentional? Is that just coincidental with the text that was chosen?
It's very intentional. It's very like we started making the works, and we knew they wanted to be very fast and very kind of funny all the time, chaotic all the time, kind of like everybody, a lot of stuff going on and people having to maneuver to really get what's happening. But then we a colleague of mine, a young director at the time, asked if she could come in and observe, because there's no chances to observe people working often. And so I was like, yeah, sure, of course, she's a friend. And so I was like, yeah, come in, and very generous. And so she sat in the room with us, and we went, well, we'll play with you if you're here. And so the actors started talking to her, and then we were like, oh, well, what is this relationship like? And so that sort of from that became like the audience relationship, and the audience interactivity, and the kind of playfulness that we have with the audience became a kind of really clear part of the show. And so it was always like, it sort of actually became the most important part of the show. So for us, when we're making a new show, we're starting with like a text often, but we're also starting with going like, rather than what is the main event of the text, like the Trojan War or the Iliad or whatever, you go, what is the main event of the thing that happens in the room with the audience? And how do those things collide and work together, so that like the breaking of the quote unquote dramaturgy of the Trojan War is a very intentional thing to then bring alive the dramaturgy that's actually happening in the room with the audience and the performers in like real time, quote unquote real time. One of my old professors would talk about it like, the here and now and the there and then of performance. So saying like, the here and now is obviously you and me in a room, and we're making a show, where this is a show, we're doing a thing together. And then the there and then is the sort of text of the Trojan War, and Achilles and Odysseus and Agamemnon and all these characters, and we're telling their story, and that's the there and then. But it keeps the here and now keeps interrupting. And we keep coming back to that. And so we keep coming back to pop songs, because they bring alive the feeling of what's going on in a way that that words or narrative might not necessarily encapture. Or they the interruptions bring us back into the room in a particular relationship, maybe, that's developed between a performer and an audience member. And all of these kinds of things that keep kind of surprising us, and keeping as an audience, keep surprising the audience and keeping us kind of off our guard a little bit as far as what's going to happen next and where the whole thing's going to go. And it creates a real kind of chaotic joy. And I think that's ultimately the whole point for us in making these works.
And that's so clear. I'm lucky enough to have watched all three of these performances, and they're just sensational and absolutely chaotic joy. Couldn't be more accurate. So you also have this wonderful troupe of very, very French performers that are coming that come and present this work. And so, how do the actors use their expressive skills to communicate their characters and then enhance the performance style? Because it's quite specific, isn't it?
It is. We first made the first show we made was Don Juan, and we were working off of it's a Spanish folk tale, but it's also a we were working off Molière's text, and so we were like, oh, well, what if they're French? And we thought it was such a stupid idea. And then here we are 10 years later. But like the French gives us a thing of we can play with the Anglophonic world. I think we thought really like the Anglophonic world really like idealizes the French, you know, the English and the New Zealanders and Australian, everybody like, oh, the French are so passionate and so, you know, they're so cool, they're so, you can say, oh my God, you're so beautiful, look at you. And everybody's like, ooh, you melt. But if we go like, oh my God, you're so beautiful, look at you, it's the potentially like a really like the mic drop of a thing or something. And so kind of playing with those. Playing with that accent and that kind of the game of being French frees up the performers to kind of be in this really beautiful, ridiculous way and celebrating our ridiculous notions of the French, you know, like celebrating the French as this really cool, kind of amazing country of people that are all just cool and passionate and very romantic and very, you know all about love and all this kind of stuff. So the actors really have to use they have to use their expressive skills in a multiplicity of ways. So they're both like playing French, but there's also a kind of wink involved in it. So they can never be like, oh, I'm not really French, you know, they have to really commit to the game of it. But there's still that the kind of history of like Monty Python and the Mighty Boosh and a number of other kind of comedians across the years, you know, and this kind of the sort of history of that Peter Sellers and those cats and like the goons and all of this, like we perform this thing, we commit fully to it, but there is this wink underneath it. So this sort of tone and the quality of it needs to demands a kind of expressiveness and a fullness of playing. So the actors have to be have to play characters that are these characters are huge, you know, they have to fill the room, and they are everything is so tragic or so beautiful or so heroic or so whatever. It's even their you know, even somebody not liking their post is a reason to mourn and to lament with the gods in the same kind of way as being heartbroken or losing somebody dying or. So there's that kind of expansiveness of performance and expansiveness of playing that's often, I think, very similar in like in the element styles of like clown or in playing Shakespeare or in playing you know, in this kind of like the Italian, what is it like what's his
Commedia
name?
dell'arte, yeah.
And that in those all of those kind of sort of village forms, you know, like we very much wanted to model this company in a like a very contemporary, very cool, very city based, but also like a bit of a crap traveling troupe. You know, it's not crap, but like, you know, they're just like come in with their rough bags and their sea that they made out of plastic and you know their Trojan horse built from whatever material that it's built from. And like all of this kind of repurposing everyday objects in this kind of way and so building imagination, but also modeling it off of this kind of traveling troupe kind of thing. So they have to the performance of it has to be this kind of big and expansive thing. Also, like technically it's very tricky because the French accent is very tough on the back of the throat. So you do this kind of thing and everybody speaks in the back of the throat because it's a very reverberant thing back here. It's also like a very bad accent. It's not good. Many French people laugh at us and think we are ridiculous. And we are. And my partner makes numerous comments about where the accent actually sits in nationalities in the world. But like the game of it again harkens back to Monty Python in that way. And those cats. But it is very hard on the back of the throat. So technically, there's a lot of projection that needs to happen. A lot of diction, actually, like sort of more diction than projection. So and a lot of twang. We have to send a lot of it up into your nasal cavities and really, really hit this kind of point up here. You know, so like if you're playing in a big space and you're trying to do this, you're trying to fill a space like chapel off chapel. Which is not a big space, but it's not small to not be mic'd in and to try to play with an accent that really sits in the back of your throat. Otherwise, you're going to lose your voice, which has happened to us at several points in playing for very long seasons and things like that, or multiple shows a day kind of thing. So practically they have to really, really hit diction and really hit the twang and the projection, try to project up into the nasal cavity. and also really warm up very strongly and warm down at the end of shows to kind of protect the vocal folds and all those things. So there's a load of craft from very kind of creative and artistic all the way to very practical and technical in terms of vocal exercise.
Yeah, and that expression probably extends to facial expression and gesture and movement as well. Those
Absolutely,
characters are
absolutely.
just embodying those characters and that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So there's the flamboyance of it. And as I'm speaking this, and we're on a podcast, so it's ridiculous, but I'm expressing more. My hands are flying all over the place. And similarly for them, for us in the performance of the work, it is that there is that demand on it, on the kind of the boldness of the gestures and the boldness of everything and the boldness of the facial quality and the vocal tones and all of that stuff. Is way more heightened and way more demanding than your kind of kitchen sink drama.
Yes, this is not kitchen sink drama. No.
No, no.
Absolutely not. There are performance skills in the VC drama curriculum, and they're focus, energy, timing, and actor audience relationship. But we're just going to focus on focus, energy, and timing for a little bit. They're so important. How are they intentionally used or manipulated in this show?
Focus, we're constantly using. One of my teachers talks, one of my teachers spoke, he's still alive, I imagine, but like he, you know, anyways, he speaks about, and this is part of that pedagogy as well. He speaks about like using suspensions. And this is heaps of people obviously work with in this way, but like, so you're using suspensions and falls and rising and whatnot. So with focus of like, if thinking that everything is a cycle, so it rises, it suspends, it falls, and it rolls. And so it rises, suspends, falls, and rolls, rises, suspends, falls, rolls. So you think about like a stepping pattern. That's what stepping is. Rising, you suspend for a moment, your foot falls, and then it rolls along the ground as your next foot comes up and rises, blah, 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 blah. And so we learned this, and we do in countless number of movement exercises and things to practice this. Because like you hold a suspension in a way that kind of like Hannah Gatsby talks about it in her comedy about like tension and release. So the suspension is the hold of the tension, and then there's the release. So frequently we're manipulating focus where suddenly, you know, all of the actors are turning to the stage left and looking away as they say something, and then they all turn at once to stage right, where somebody's put on a helmet and become Achilles, and they said like, and there was Achilles, and then everybody goes into a suspension, so takes a breath in and sort of holds it as they gesture, and we all hold and we all sit, and it creates this kind of tension, as demonstrated marvelously by, Tim Curry in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, famously in that anticipation kind of thing. It's like the holding of breath and the movement around the space. So we're with focus, we're constantly creating bits of flurry of attention over on the right side of the stage or over in the back of the house, so that then we can throw all the attention to the other side of the stage or the other side of the space in that kind of way and reveal something magical. And so, yes, so focus is a massive part of what's happening. Also, that there's always somebody we play because everybody's speaking at the same time. It can become just a soup and a noise and a chaos. And we know that the playing is very bad when you can't kind of follow and hear, like we're all going, oh, nobody's listening to each other, nobody's paying attention to what's going on, and helping the thing drive along in the way that we know it needs to. So there's this way we play with the principles of like playing in major or in minor. So if I'm, we want to always keep the stage alive, everybody alive, and that the whole space is alive. So that if I'm in the back of the audience with you, and somebody says something about, oh, Achilles is there, and I can be like, oh, he's very beautiful. I have such a big crush on him, you know, like, and I can say something that just you and the people around you might get, and there's a little titter of laughter maybe in that area, and it sort of people look around like, what was that? You know, but it can't also deter from the main action, which is the introduction of Achilles, and then we have to follow him, and we all have to kind of keep up to date with what's going on. And so they're constantly sort of listening and focusing on each other, on who's in major, and making sure that that is carrying on while also keeping the little minor bits alive and making sure that everybody feels like included and a part of the whole show and that the whole audience is kind of stimulated and alive the whole time. So that's, those are some of the ways we use focus. What was the second one?
Energy, and what a great description of focus. Brilliant.
Energy is, I mean, energy is similar in a way, I guess. I mean, you like, I guess, like energy is, it's sort of similar, kind of an ebbs and flows of things. So, obviously, you can't maintain absolute bedlam, or like, probably not a good use of the word bedlam anymore. Anyways, you can't maintain like absolute sort of pandemonium or chaos, absolute chaos that's. Like you can't kind of maintain that level of pitch for very long because it's exhausting to watch, but also obviously exhausting to do. And you're manipulating energy all the time to go like, yeah, what is how do we manipulate where the what the feeling is of the audience so that we can go, we build and we build something small and then it explodes into something bigger and we move the energy through from one thing to the other. Like in general, for all of the actors, the energy level is always at full. And that's a pretty clear indication. That's a pretty clear indication of like how well the show goes. And most of the time we do the shows and they're strong, like the shows they're structured and we've practiced them and the actors are really fantastic at listening and responding to audience members and it's a joy to do. But it's so demanding. It's such demanding work that you cannot go to sleep on it. You can't kind of just phone it in the way that a lot of actors phone in, the check off that they're not really that interested in doing or whatever play they're doing that they might be a little bit bored with. If you try to phone in this work, you'll get just annihilated by the audience. Like you'll just feel it immediately and be on the back foot and trying to catch up the whole time. So. It demands really that the actors are always on the front of their feet, always like a cat. One of my dear friends would say, like an actor should be like a cat, like ready, relaxed, totally there, but at the same time, totally ready to pounce at any point in time. And so, like the energy that it demands from the performers is very great. Because even if I'm doing nothing, quote unquote, and sitting in a corner and maybe making the occasional aside, I'm still holding the space for whatever is going on the other side of it that might be what's in major at the time. And I have to keep the people that I'm with alive and keep them focused on what's going on there. So I have to like that requires me to be listening at such a high level and present at such a high level. That like in the moments, and of course everybody falls off our presence, we're not like Zen masters, or like even then you're a Zen master, your presence still falls away. And so you keep kind of trying, you keep having to bring it back, but all the time if it goes away, you feel it very quickly and you're like, oh no, I've got to get everything back and I've got to get my energy back up and get back engaged with what's going on. Yeah, so there's kind of multiple ways that the actors are using both the demanding of their own energy and then the way that the narrative is kind of shaping the energy as it goes. So it's a kind of celebratory thing as Helen marries Menelaus or whichever audience member is Menelaus for that day. And then we can celebrate the audience member and their vows is beautiful and it's this whole moment. And then the fight that happens between them is in the next moment of a kind of different sort of energy that's a little bit tense and whatever, and then that's fine. And then Paris and Helen flee, and it's a very kind of exciting kind of thing. And then the ships go, and it's all like manipulating and moving how the ebb and flow of the dramaturgy goes and the energy flows in the space, if that makes any sense.
Oh yes, and it's so evident by watching it as well. It's all there. I think of the introduction of Helen and them talking, "Oh, you're beautiful both inside and outside." And then there's this major energy shift, despite that being, beautiful intensity with the energy beforehand, and that shifts into a song, that boss song that that despite it being at a high level, then they flip it into overdrive a second later, or you transition your energy to be slightly different. But there's so many great examples of shifting energy in this work.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's a big, yeah, it's a big thing to manipulate all that for us. It's a big
Of
focus.
course, and it's beautiful to watch. It's gorgeous watching expert energy and focus. And we talked a little bit about timing. I think of the jewel towards the end of the work, but timing you use throughout the entire piece as a piece of comedy. But I'm wondering if you talked about timing in the work as well.
Timing is like complex and very simple at the same time, I guess. Like again, it's similar to what the manipulation of energy in that way, but like a lot of it is, I think when I think about timing and the difference between that and energy, or the difference between that and manipulating the dramaturgy, it's like there's so much of it that is a it is in response or in reaction to, and that is very intuitive and felt. So we've basically, I mean, like we created Don Juan in 2015, so we're like on the verge of 10 years of working with this same company of people and around doing this kind of work and this like kind of crafting these sorts of things. And it's a joy and a like a privilege and a blessing to be a part of, because it's, because over the years now, it's like the timing and the presence and everything is developed. That's that the like all of the notes are given. There's very shorthand, and there's, I remember a show we did in 2017 or 18 or something, and Andrew, who plays Julie, was in the middle of like saying something, and then they said, and she said something and went blah 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 blah. And then the kind of timing, everybody laughed and it was a good joke, but like the timing was just a touch off. And I was like sitting in the audience and I just sort of bent down to make a note, and I could feel her looking at me, and she wasn't like really in the next moment very much, but I went down to make a note just to go like, oh, the timing there. And I kind of went and half looked up at her, and she just like waved me off and was like, no, I've got it, don't bother, like I know. And she just in the middle of the show was like, no, it's okay, fine, I got it. And so it was this kind of a really lovely moment where, and I just laughed, had this little nice moment. We had this nice moment together in the middle of the show, and the show carried on. And but that's the kind of like, some of that is just innate, I think. I mean, I've met and worked with a lot of actors that are like innately have good timing and understand, especially in comedy, in that way of how to hold something and when to release it. And often, if we start to think about it too much, it becomes very complex. Because it's like, okay, no, wait for four beats. No, four, wait, 6.5 beats, and you're just kind of like, wait, what is it? Like trying to work out what is the tension and what's the release of that and how you manipulate that and maneuver that. Whereas like most of the stuff that's just really amazing is the performers kind of reacting in the moment and just innately responding to what happens in front of them. And holding something for the perfect amount of time and then delivering the next line to then move on and release all of the tension out of that. It's a kind of back and forth that we're like, there are some things that are very kind of constructed and very structured and set. And we know it's like three counts there, follow the sound effect. It goes here, the sword goes bing, 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 boom, bing, 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 boom, bing, 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 boom. So it's very much a dance that then has to go like bing, 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 boom, 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 and then like release in some kind of way that we've discovered. But like all of that is really like trial and error and discovered, and very, very can be very laborious and very demand a great deal of rigor, because it feels awful to keep getting it wrong. And so you just have to keep going, oh no, that's not it, but like not get angry or upset with yourself or feel just disheartened by it. But yeah, all and a lot of that stuff is basically us trying to recreate some impulse, intuitive impulse that happened in the moment, and the actor just kind of listening to the audience and listening to themselves and listening to each other in such a beautiful way, and then going blah 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 and delivering something, and then we're like, oh, that's great, now do it like that every time. But it's that's its own kind of trickiness. Anyways,
Absolutely. And keep it spontaneous. Rehearsed spontaneity is a real trick, isn't it?
yes,
Great. Well, thank you so much for describing focus, energy, and timing in such
no
detail.
worries.
And there are so many rich examples from the show, as everyone will notice as well. We just kind of pivot to talking about the dramatic elements, which is another part of the study design that the students will focus on. And we might start with the first three, mood, rhythm, and tension. How do you see them manipulated in the work?
Rhythm and tension. A lot of how I think I've spoken to, like with the manipulations, but like tension, especially with using suspensions and releases is what we're often doing, example, like, and then he killed Achilles. Wait, Achilles can't die. There's all these kind of like very simple like things that are like they're simple, but they're also complex, and they're also, it's you're manipulating them, but like finding them and putting them together can be its own really tricky, like kind of laborious, again, laborious kind of process. But yeah, that kind of manipulating the suspension and release, the tension, knowing that we have to build stuff up. So the shows start with a lot of opening patter often, and we go, this is, and they start, well, they start first with us building relationship with the audience, which is important. That's not a, you've already mentioned relationship, and I know I'm talking a lot about that, but then they start with this kind of patter, which is a sort of like a classic, I guess, vaudeville thing. I don't know where necessarily where it comes from, but it's a kind of like, and the Boosh have a gag where they just start off with all this pattern, and they're like, that's not the show. This isn't the show, by the way. This isn't, da, da, da. And that's an old gag as well. But like, we're sort of playing off of that thing of like, hello, everybody, and welcome. And then we've just got some housekeeping, and then you like kind of deal with like who's single, who's not, who's getting to know everybody and building the relationship, but also like putting everybody at ease and a kind of thing, so that you're sort of lulling people to a thing, so that then like in Jekyll and Hyde, there's a very specific moment where it's like, oh, the darkness within, and then the lights go out and this massive noise goes and everybody screams, and it's one of the best moments, my favorite moments of things, because we use rhythm to kind of build this like blah 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 blah. This is the rhythm, this is the energy, this is the kind of thing, and then boom, it's like there's the surprise of the explosion of the sound effect and the blackout, and it really sets the tone for then kind of the sort of the scariness of it. And in a similar way with like the Trojan War, there's not such a kind of jolt or change, but very much, the Trojan War and this massive horses and chariots and bum, 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 this kind of like flurry of things, and it's this very epic sort of notion, and yeah, sort of like, so playing with this kind of lulling people down with this sort of storytelling that goes like this into this, but then this happened, and this kind of, then we jump into these more really more structured set pieces, which are often very rhythmic and very fast and very sound cue driven, and like almost like dance numbers or pieces, like choreographed pieces of movement and sound and all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
That
absolutely. And
that
even
really,
the yeah, sorry, go for it.
no, you like
Even
yeah.
the rhythm of that escape, Helen's escape, and the death of all the different characters, and then it slows right down, and then we get that little joke at the end,
Yeah.
with the final death. That use of rhythm for a comic effect, I think, is really clever and
Yeah,
clear.
absolutely. Yeah, sort of heaps of stuff like that that we're just like, yeah, you're kind of like, you're moving along and then you do a thing and then it's like, oh wait, I died? Oh shit. And like, you have to lay down and die, and there's this sort of slow moment of that. And yeah, totally. The rhythms of moving between the sort of epic or the scary and the domestic and the yeah, sort of manipulating all of those kinds of things, I
Yeah.
think is a big way of using that.
Happens throughout. And mood, we have that kind of joyful mood and entertaining, positive, buoyant experience throughout the entire show. Can you think of moments where the mood shifts really dynamically or dramatically?
Yeah, like we do, I mean, like yeah, so like it's like, guess we would say like that's the sort of game of the audience, you're like, hello, everybody, and like the storytelling and the like, and so he does this thing, and we're working it out with you, and we're doing this kind of performance that we're sort of telling the story together, and it's very buoyant and yeah, like driven in that kind of way. And then there's several moments, I think, like, you know, the death of characters often triggers it, where there's a kind of like, oh, there's a sort of then a mournful or a sadness kind of that comes into it, and we take a moment. Each of the shows has kind of one of these moments where we slow down, I think. We sing a song, and it's like the mood is more becomes a bit more what's the word? Kind of like not
Somber.
somber, yeah, I guess so, sort of somber, but like in a kind of, again, we try to keep something of the sort of, yeah, the somber, a somber, but also a kind of philosophical nature to it. I don't know if that makes any sense, if that's just me.
Yeah, definitely in the ceasefire, that song that you sing after the 12 days of so they can bury
Yes.
their dead, that's a
Yeah,
clear moment.
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, so that's the one I'm thinking of, where they give Hector's body back, and you see the father reunited with his dead son, and it's not like, we never want to try to play like the reality of that, but like to try to kind of lean into the, like, what's the imagination of that? You
Yeah,
know,
because I
what's
think Achilles has just finished beating the body bag on the
Yeah.
floor and there's just come from a comedic moment as
Yes.
well straight into this. So the shifts are really strong and still maintaining the style. It's really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And to kind of take a breath as well, you know, and sit with the bigger, like, there's something of just a glimpse of the bigger questions, you know, a glimpse of the mortality and of all of that kind of thing, and the sorrow and the, you know, and we're not, we aspire towards that. And there are moments where you can feel it, I think, in the audience, in the shows, in certain moments. I've felt it just over the years, you know, where there is often of like an ability to have a big profundity. And we don't really want necessarily people to go away and talk about it or anything like that. That's not like kind of the point of it, but like just to allow the moment for us to sit together after this big joyousness. I think that would be, if looking at how we would evolve the work, that's kind of an interesting question, I think, in it, about like, how do you sit a little bit more in the profundity, or the kind of the, like, yeah, the big feeling of like loss or mortality, or the big kind of, yeah, I don't know how we sit in those questions a little bit more, but at the same time then still with being able to come back into the joy. It's
Yeah.
an interesting, very interesting wrestle,
Yeah, you
I would
manage that dance, that balance really well, I think, just from an outsider's perspective.
say. That's
You're so incredibly generous with your time, and I thought we might continue to talk about some of the other dramatic elements that are present in the work. Although I think we've touched on them bit by bit as we've gone, I wonder if you might just give us an example or two, or maybe just one of each of the other elements throughout the work, possibly like
Sure.
contrast. Can you think of a way that contrast is used in the work intentionally?
Yeah, we're like, I think contrast between like the feeling of the domestic and the epic is definitely throughout all of the works, and that kind of way of like, you know, Achilles and Patroclus, these like massive heroes, and then they like go bowling, you know, and it's this kind of feeling of them having a little crush. And so, like, that contrast of really like our everyday lives and the epic feelings that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful example. And contrast is used throughout the work. Use of song and lighting create really strong contrast throughout. Conflict as well. Obviously, we see some battles, some duels, some death. Even there's like this gorgeous minute-long, raucous, chaotic battle when the Greeks attack Troy. It's just kind of
Yes.
a minute of intense acting. I wonder if there's inner conflict that's represented, like more symbolic conflict at any point, but also you can just talk about literal conflict as well.
The literal conflict is, I think, there, like you say, the sort of inner conflict. There's a lot of stuff. Sorry, I'm moving around a little bit. There's a lot of stuff with the actors and the audience, and like one of the actors falls in love and or has this full relationship with an audience member, and then has to go through this massive self change and has to question what they're doing and all this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of work like that that's done throughout the show, I think, where you see the inner conflict of like the actor, like wrestling with their relationship with the audience members at different points.
Yeah, it's great too that it keeps returning to that, this love, and eventually this love triangle and the
Yeah.
conflict that that brings up internally. Even them having that inner conflict with fate and this isn't fair. Like it ends and they go, what? This isn't, that's not right. And they literally have to manifest fate in order for them to deal with their internal conflicts. But I could, that could just be my reading of it,
Oh,
obviously.
no, that's absolutely accurate. And that's just trying to go like, what does it all mean? And not having any real answer for that. And
There's about 1 million climaxes in this show. Often theater plays work up to one big climax, but you just do this beautiful job of massaging mini moments of climax, anti-climax. I think we just almost talked about one. The end of the show is a quasi anti-climax, and then it ends with this wonderful singing, these wonderful songs. Anyway, how do you think climax is used in the work?
Similarly, like like you say, we build up to something and then we let it like ends up falling apart. And like you said, there are a bunch of climaxes in the work, but I guess that was us trying to figure out how we like work to climax everything together. And as I say that, it sounds interesting. But like that's basically what we're trying to do is like the relationship between the actors and the audience and the relationship between that we've seen with the actors and their own internal conflicts and climate and crisis and trying to help to create all of that and allow that to come together and explode all as the city of Troy is sacked and we have the song and we do all of this stuff and that's kind of how we use that.
And that's the ultimate climax in your mind, do you think, from the
I
show?
think so, yeah. Like, and then we sort of go into the sort of fate thing and trying to work with that, as a kind of wrestle at the end a little bit. But so it sort of goes back up into a little celebratory moment. But yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of where the whole thing tries to come together, at least. It's still in development. We'll still keep tinkering with it, I think.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful show. Our last two dramatic elements start with S, was start with space and maybe finish with sound because that's a bit trickier for this work. The
Oh,
space, I
yeah.
mean, there's no way you don't use the space. It's incredible what you do, but I thought you might want to talk for a moment about how you use the space.
Yes. Space and do by space do you mean like the actual physical theater space itself, or are you also referring to like does this also refer to like set and props and things like that, or is that another
Yes, well,
is that a
that
different?
is that gets to be its own special thing, which is production areas, which we might talk about in a little bit. But space is how we
Yeah, correct.
manipulate dimension and levels, how you think about using
Ah,
space. Even the traverse
yeah, correct.
staging that you've chosen is really interesting.
Yeah, very good. Yes. So space, how do we use space? Like I've said previously, we'd like to kind of use everything, use in and around the audience as much as possible, so we're behind as much as we can and to the side and like yeah we our preference is basically an intimate what we call an intimate traverse which is a kind of like 200 people fewer than 200 people crammed into a kind of like weird rundown space that's acoustically amazing but like and that plays kind of the traverse is very much about like people seeing each other, people being together, and us all being together the whole time, and a kind of the kind of communal celebration and the communal kind of playfulness of the whole thing. So we find like when we can, for us, it's very important as much as possible, and we often don't get this on tour because we're going to venues that we're not selecting, that are asking us to come. So. And chapel is one of these that we selected, but it still is not quite where we have a walk around the audience again to be able to get behind them and often to like surprise and to keep changing the space in a surprising way that's also very organic and works with like the whole shape and structure of the storytelling. So for Trojan War, it was a no-brainer that it was in traverse. Given the sort of notion of war and us and them and the kind of two sides of things and knowing that we'd want to play with that back and forth of the whole battle. For other shows, it's more about the kind of looking over, seeing audience members across the way and playing in that kind of way. In terms of levels and things like that, we go with a traveling kind of troupe model and to try to be financially viable, having very little freight. So building levels is never really an option, but I guess we try to do that by playing with whatever different levels exist in the space naturally. So for instance, in chapel, there's the obviously like the runway that goes up the middle of the seating block. And so playing with that sort of up and down and as well, and using that and sort of like, and then in other spaces, you know, we find different things and are playing with kind of levels and things in that way. But yeah, like it's basically, we think of it, I think, a lot also in the kind of rhythmic way where you're like moving in and around the space, and some bits are like kind of basically whirlwinding everywhere. And then some bits are kind of condensing down, or like with the fight scene in Trojan War, it is a very much a like it's like the tennis match kind of relationship where it's a sort of back and forth, and it's a very clear like they're on that plane the whole time, and it's very much about these two sort of invincible warriors kind of colliding in the middle of this sort of thing, and building that tension around that.
Yeah, and you're also totally up in this space with the use of that plastic wrap as the water, as the audience gets to become part of the production. I think space is really interesting there.
Totally.
You're underneath the plastic, you're on top of the plastic, you're at all ends of the plastic. The audience become part of the space. Like, it's hard to tell when the space starts and ends with your fabulous productions.
Yeah, and that's very much like that's very much like a part of the ethos of the whole experience. So it's one of our core values, is that like yeah, everything is surrounding and around, and you're a part of it. And but like also that you're a part of it in a really like gentle and safe way, like that you're like you know, if we're just playing behind you, then you don't necessarily need to be afraid that you're gonna have to do some, you know, like you're gonna have to do something or you're gonna be picked on or anything like that, but it's still like you're still immersed in the world of it. Sound is obviously it's a super dense show with sound, and we use that as a massive element that drives a lot of the work, and often, yeah, like comes back and is the key component for many pieces of throughout the show.
Sound in this for our wonderful curriculum isn't recorded sound as a dramatic element. It
Oh
actually
yeah.
exists at its own thing. So I was having watching the show, I was
Oh.
thinking, where are the moments of live sound? There are sound like there are live sound effects that happen sometimes. Most of them are pre-recorded. Can you think of
Yes.
moments with the microphone playing, Helen sometimes singing into it live?
Yeah, I
But
mean, like, yeah, we do stuff like that. That's all amplified, though. Most of our stuff is amplified in some way. Yeah, we don't do a lot of Foley stuff, but occasionally we do some elements of that.
I thought we might change tact for a little bit and talk about production areas. They have lots of different names and lots of context. We have production areas like lighting, set, costume, and sound. And I guess we're
Yeah.
most interested in how they're used symbolically in the work. Do you want to talk about them individually or as one, because there's so much overlap with your production areas? Like, costume is also props and it's also set. It's everything.
Like we could talk about them as one, I think. Probably could sort of like I start with one and then move to the next and whatnot, and I'm
Great.
sure we'll
Maybe
overlap.
lighting and sound together for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like lighting again, we intend to be quite simple because we want to be able to move and be in many spaces and not demand you know, things like we've played in outdoors in the middle of summer, and so like there's no blackouts, and we've played in tents that don't have that capacity either, and bars that don't have that capacity, and so we've been wanting to be kind of very, I guess, open with how we can do that. So we keep it quite simple, but and try to kind of again we keep the audience lit the whole time. I think that's the biggest bit of it. And if you tell people, like you tell lighting designers or even other directors and things like that, you're like, we turn the house lights on and people are kind of like, whoa, what's, you can't do that. We have to be in the dark. And it's a sort of phenomenal kind of thing because I think like being in the dark, it does, I like making work that is very dark at some points and very kind of like, you know, very small amounts of light. But when you put audiences in the dark, they do kind of disconnect in an interesting way, I think in a subconscious kind of way. But like, yeah, it's a kind of fascinating thing. Anyways, and for us, especially for this work, we want to keep them alive and keep them aware. like of each other and of the whole kind of event that we're making together.
And that's
So,
contrasted
yeah.
with that kind of, there's an intense moment of blackout in the work, and then there are these songs that are in these really harsh kind of side lights. I don't know how you describe that use of
Yeah.
light in those moments.
Yeah. So like, and so like, yeah, with the blackout stuff, it's like, it's often very much like, I guess with Trojan War, we kind of got a little bit more kind of more states on it. Like we actually have a different kind of state that we do if we can, for the boats. And when that happens, and yeah, we have like a darker kind of moments for the body and the songs and things like that. And yeah, those are these more sort of ultra theatrical kind of moments, and sort of using the lighting in a way of, I guess using a lighting as a way again of breaking yeah, busting into these kind of like those moments of kind of like we want the feeling of like I'm like singing in your bedroom, like, or singing in the shower where you feel completely free, and like if nobody's home and nobody's listening to you, and you're just like, and you're in the car and you're just like singing full blast at like one of your favorite songs that's come on or whatever it is. That's kind of the feeling of the explosiveness that we're after with those songs, and that yeah, going into that kind of light to sort of uber theatricalize those moments, and it makes sidelight makes everybody look beautiful. So it's a kind of, manipulation of the sort of, I don't know, the elements to kind of make the performers become a little bit more otherworldly in those moments as well.
Yeah, it's really effective. It works really well. And sound is, you've just got that nonstop throughout this being not the dramatic element, but the production area. Well, this
Yeah,
sound, yeah, is a wholly part of your work.
it's a pretty yeah. It's the key kind of element to things, and we just had amazing collaborations with some really fantastic sound designers, and Sam, who's our current designer, we've been working with since 2017, really consistently, and has been kind of the company designer and operator and sound engineer and. At most points, technical manager and production manager, and kind of just doing everything because he can, and he's an amazing artist and practitioner and technician and everything. And anyway, so like we've worked with some amazing sound designers over the years.
And what do you think is the intention of the sound in the work?
It's basically around what is the intention? It's like. Often it's around the other world, like creating the extra worldly quality of it, like the kind of epic or the scary or the romantic or the sort of bold, epic, kind of beautiful, like the sprawling kind of journeying quality of Don Juan, and that kind of like on a journey going whatever, like that kind of like bigger than life, extra daily, whatever all the different words for it are, the kind of almost superhero kind of quality to it. So like with all of the fights and there's all these stings and kind of effects, so that there's that kind of mythic almost quality to these characters. So
Yeah, that
I
makes
think
a
with
lot of
like with
sense. And it supports, like, when the
yeah.
gods intervene, there's these, otherworldly sounds, and
Yeah.
that continues throughout the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also like there's it's a very practical, like it's a lot of fun to kind of like put your hand in the air and somebody makes an explosion sound, or to be able to like you make a gun and like somebody makes an amazingly loud shooting sound, or like whatever it is, like it's a kind of joy to do. And so like we make these things then, like we build these like intricate kind of fights or choreographies or things like that where the actors are doing a lot of fast stuff that's like super in sync with the sound, or they're all in sync together, and then kind of give the audience a chance to kind of play a little bit of that game, and of course much in a much more relaxed kind of less synchronized and choreographed kind of way, but still like synchronized. Like Sam's quite adept at like following on his hotkeys and hitting all the right effects when audience members randomly improvise in different ways, and so he's really like his skills there of listening and watching and seeing what the audience is going to do and kind of responding to it is pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's
And it
unbelievable.
just, yeah. Yeah. And so it just gives that epic quality, like if somebody The God intervenes and somebody gets up and puts their hands in the air in a dramatic gesture, and then there's this explosive or this like lightning bolt kind of sound or whatever it is, then it really does like just make that person in feel like they're kind of a god for a moment. And it's just the exact point, I think, of what we're trying to do and the playfulness in that. And
Yeah, well, speaking of the playfulness, the costume and the props and the set, they kind of overlap. We've got the cardboard boxes that are the kind of the booby trap and the Trojan horse, and then the bucket hats that are kind of props that also become the characters, and the seer and the suitcases that become a horse, and then a gun, like like a bazooka. Can you talk a little bit about the choice to have this kind of overlapping sense of set props and costume design, if it's intentional?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's intentional, and it's a really core value, and like an old held like a long held value of the company is basically like, we want to create basically imaginative worlds out of everyday objects. So like use everyday objects in imaginative ways, or in like, I say it very like, oh, we're creating, these imaginative transformative worlds that, encouraging audiences to like, even as they watch a, it could be a realistic moment or whatever, but they're watching this thing, us transform this object into another thing, which then sort of enlivens their imaginations in a way that they maybe haven't done since they were kids. And it just like, there's a real joy to it. And there's also like a real kind of creativity that I think is sparked from it for people. Like every time we pull out the ocean, either this one or the one that we use in Don Juan, every time we kind of pull that out and people are like, what's going on? They're just pulling out a big bit of plastic. And then the whole image sets in and people just go like, ah, like you hear there's an audible gasp and, or an audible kind of like, oh, like as people get it. And it's a kind of joy, because it's like it sort of makes the audience, the theory is this is also like, this is way old, this is Peter Brook, this is a lot of thinking that's not us, that's just inherited, but that there's like the thinking is that it makes an audience less passive, it makes them into active participants. They're using their imagination and they're meeting us halfway, basically. In the same way that like a really engrossing novel gets you to, be in the world and see the people and do all that kind of stuff. So it's a very kind of like tactical sort of use of the everyday objects to try to transform them into these otherworldly and bigger than life kind of things.
Were any chosen specifically for a reason, like the boxes or the suitcase or the bucket hats, or maybe I'm thinking specifically of Helen with the shawl and the microphone. I wonder if they were specifically chosen to create a sense or a feeling, or was it more just for, speed and pace?
It's like it's all feeling based, like, and we choose them all for like, we kind of go like, yeah, do they make the right kind of feeling, and do they do the right kind of thing? Because we're like, they don't we don't tend to make from a real meaning kind of place, so like we're not very symbolic in that way. Like we are you can read symbolism into stuff and that's fine, but that's not how we make. We make from a feeling. So we're like, Helen wants to be beautiful, but we also like kind of want, Helen doesn't want to be a person. Helen wants to be an image, like a kind of enigmatic image. And I guess the veil on the headband and the microphone was kind of the best way we could find to do that. And so that others, people could pass the character around. And excuse me, anybody could play Helen. And the audience would be all right to kind of figure out and pick up who she is. But also that like kind of like, yeah, this sort of shimmering kind of gold veil. And we went through a lot of iterations of that, and like, and tried a lot of things, like different effects that like every time you spoke on the microphone, a harp would play in the background. Sam found some sort of, I guess like plug-in or whatever for his keypad that could do that. So every time that you'd speak on a mic, you'd hear harp music. But then it made it really hard to hear what the actor was saying.
And so we were kind of like, okay, cool. It's a beautiful effect, but it's also like it just makes it incoherent a little bit. And so it's a kind of balance of going, what's a quick way of doing this? Because we know we have to change fast and we have to be able to pass it around and do all these things. But like Helen specifically, like we did with Don Juan and like we did with Achilles as well, was going like, we didn't want one actor to be Helen or one actor to be Achilles. So like these iconic kind of characters, we want them to be a feeling or an idea, or like not an idea, but a feeling or a kind of, yeah, some sort of device that is like that, and that also like takes them out of this world a little bit. And so, yeah, so like putting like Achilles with the helmet out of the bucket and the mutt and the broom handle and this kind of thing was like, yeah, again, it was kind of this kid's game of transformation.
It's so
Also
successful
skewering
too.
face.
Obscuring the
Yeah,
face. So
yeah.
yes, what was that? What's the intention behind obscuring the face?
But like, well, like obscuring the face. So again, it's not like you're not looking at the actor, and you can hear their voice, but it's not so much about what their voice, because their voice is then picked up off them off a microphone and amplified and pitch shifted and changed a little bit. So their voice sounds a bit bigger and more otherworldly than it would be. But also because we obscure the face, there's like, yeah, there's a kind of mask to it, so it gives them a kind of power in playing it. And yeah, and so like we're always, I mean, in all of the shows we've done different elements of similar things. Like I think in Don Juan we have him as he's holding a speaker and is mouthing the words all the time, and so you never hear the voice of Don Juan. It's always another voice that's amplified and projected in a different kind of way. And similarly with like Jekyll and Hyde is a crazy, like this big wig that hides the face quite a bit, and then the actor on mic with a very low pitch shifted distorted voice that makes them into this kind of otherworldly sort of creature. And it's about, yeah, so it's all about like all of, for those characters, it's about like shifting them into the right realm. So shifting Achilles up into this sort of warrior that's, you know, you're just walking around with a bit of reverb on your voice, and everything you do is kind of a bit cooler, you know.
Yes, it is. A lot of the show is cool, and that sense of play is so really, really clear. And you've spoken a lot about character transformation, about transforming using the bucket or the headband and the veil. There are lots of different ways that that happens live in front of everyone. So that's really, really clear. And you've also spoken a lot about the actor-audience relationship. Do you ever feel that there are moments where the fourth wall is established, that like you break the fourth wall and speak to the audience and engage with the audience all the time? But I wonder if there are times where you intentionally establish a wall where they're really watching, observers, not participants.
I don't know. I don't know if we do. I mean, for like a few seconds at a time, I think probably.
Yeah, it's only
But
a few moments,
even
but.
yeah, it's just like, I mean, like there are moments where we go into a kind of scene or something, and like we have, you know, Priam begging for the body of Hector from Achilles and stuff. And so there's like three or four lines of a scene that happen that are kind of a little bit of a fourth wall, but also not like the other actors on stage are kind of like, we're never explicit about it. The other actors are almost always free to kind of make asides or potentially comment on the action as it's happened. Like, you know, if there's, because our actors are, as I said, really like fantastic at listening to audiences and listening to the moment. Like, yeah, if they're up for kind of like something comes to them and they're like, you know, there's kind of fair game to not, as long as they don't feel like it's undercutting anything, and you know, they know the story and they know what we're trying to make. So I don't think they genuinely never would, but yeah,
Great.
there's
That's
not
not
like,
amazing.
yeah, there's no like explicit moments, I don't think.
Yeah, that's okay. I can only think of a few, and that's fine. They're similar, just for a few lines. You've been exceptionally generous with your time, and I wonder if you don't mind commenting just in the last few moments. We talked about the costumes that people swap, but I wonder if there was intention behind the red lips and makeup, the red handkerchief, the white shirts, the black, the ginger wears. Are those colors chosen specifically? Are they, did they design the costumes? I know they're the same costumes across all three shows, but I wonder for this, for the Trojan War, is there any reason why they're dressed in those colors?
No, like the biggest reason they come from our production designer who still is working on the shows when we need her to, but also like we've kind of been going for a long time, so we'll adjust as we need to as well. And if we're on the road and she's in Wellington, she's yeah, she's kind of given us basically the rules of it now, and we kind of adjust as we need to. Over the years, it started off as just black and white and gray, with a splash of color, and it was kind of any color, and it was that kind of thing. And then in the last couple of years, I guess it's evolved to like black and white and gray with a splash of red or pink or something with a splash of a kind of warm reddish pinkish something. And I don't know, we did a version of Don Juan in China, which was amazing. And the designer there was like, oh, we can't use that here, because she was saying like, because it's Chinese, is the people's skin was so different than our performers that the having those colors wouldn't work with them. It would wash them out. And so she was like, how can we just do reds and pinks? And that, and so she made this beautiful design of like reds and pinks. And then we kind of got, I think we got inspired by that, basically. And so we adapted a kind of red pink as a as the accent color. And it comes from a kind of like a kind of formal wear, an idea of formal wear, like black, white, and gray is a kind of formal wear that we wanted, very clean, very, very cool, very kind of like a night out on the town. And we try to make it like an outfit that everybody feels really good in and really, really sexy in. And so that then they can, like, yeah, then they're just as free as possible to be as bold as they can be as performers. Yeah.
That
And so
makes a
then the
lot of
red was
sense.
just, yeah. Then the red was kind of there because it was in Julie's necklace from the start, really. And always a red lip for Julie. And the kind of eyeliner and all of that stuff was a residual of growing up in the 90s, I think, and which is like kind of started to come back now, I guess, which is weird.
It is back. That's
But
true.
but like and also like and like in a really beautiful way, just people, all sorts of people claiming their own kind of gender identities and all of these things, and like adapting makeup for their own needs and their own ways. And that was always a thing. Like, I mean, it was always like with working with like working in this way of going like we want people to be as much themselves as they possibly can. And so it was actually a really beautiful moment. Like when I was watching one of the shows with a friend of mine. And the show finished, and he just went like he looked at Andrew like running around as Julie in his heels and stuff, and going like, "It's really beautiful because like and like Julie is not drag, Julie is just Andrew." And so we were like, it was the kind of thing is like you basically just made a thing where Andrew can be most Andrew, like he can be the most himself, and it's been like kind of that thing for everybody of going like, "Where are you most yourself, and what are you?" Where do you feel like, where is your sexuality in this? Where is your sense of play in this? Where is your sense of exploration or boldness or adventure or whatever it is? And trying to kind of encourage everybody to grow into that as much as possible. And I think the costumes and the makeup and things have evolved to sort of help people sort of do that, really. And to feel and as we all age and change, and to feel good in the bot in our bodies as they aged and changed over the years. And so the costumes have adapted as well to kind of do that. And it's, I mean, the whole thing is really about a celebration of how ridiculous our ridiculous lives is, and like in a way how messed up our lives are, and how like that's a beautiful thing. Like we aim for these perfect lives, but they're all just a mess.
Well, I
And
think we
so we.
just came full circle on this interview, from the first question to the
Yeah, great.
last,
Yeah,
from the
great.
style. That's what it's all about, right? It's all about heightening and exaggerating and having fun and playing. And that comes through just so beautifully in your work. And thank you for creating it and making it with your
Yeah.
team, because it's a really special thing.
Oh. Thank you. That's awesome. It's a pretty lucky and amazing thing to be able to do, and a joy to do, and yeah. And thank you so much for all of this.
No problem. We can't wait to see it for coming opening night. Well, thank you for your
Yeah.
time today,
Oh,
Leo
fantastic.
Jean Peters.
Lovely. Thank you, Nick.
And that is all the time we have today. If you would like to find out more about A Slightly Isolated Dog, or how you can see them performing at Chapel Off Chapel and other venues around Victoria, please go to the link in the episode description to find out more. That may be all from this episode, but there are many more episodes of The Aside. Feel free to go through our bank of episodes to find one that piques your interest on many different topics related to VCE Theatre Studies, VCE Drama, the Victorian curriculum, and just interviews and conversations with fabulous creatives. If you would like to ask us a question, or you have a suggestion for a future episode, do not hesitate to contact us at asidepodcast@outlook.com, or of course you can find us on Facebook. Thank you very much to Aaron Searle for providing the music, to Halebury for letting us record here, to Drama Victoria for their ongoing support, and of course, thank you for listening.